You really should be a civil engineer if you're going to diagnose foundation issues, which require soil mechanics and structural load paths, and specify repairs. That's what engineering does. That's what engineers are paid to do. So in essence, if you're doing those things and you're not an engineer, you're practicing engineering without a license.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Passive Wealth Strategy Show. This is the show that will teach you how to build wealth with real estate without buying yourself another job. As always, I am your host, Taylor Lote, and today we are joined by Bob Brown. Bob is a foundation repair expert. He built a successful foundation repair business, invested in residential and commercial property along the way, and successfully exited his foundation repair business back in December of 2022. But he kept his commercial property that houses the business to keep some passive income coming in, which is great. He has invented and patented 4 products along the way and has 5 more patents pending. So today we're going to dig into the world of foundation repair and how investors can arm ourselves with knowledge, if you will, when we have potential foundation issues and when we have to deal with foundation contractors. Bob, thank you so much for joining us today. Now that you've sold the business, what are you up to these days? What's it like to be retired?
Yeah, I always have a million irons in the fire. Just published my book, and I'm doing a lot of interviews like this as a result. I'm patenting and testing several products and developing those. I'm working on some software that I developed, and I'm working on my properties. There's things I like to do, more of a hobby. It's fun stuff.
Busy man. I love that. So let's get started. Let's dig into foundation repair, no pun intended. Okay, the foundation question, when I think we're looking at a property that we can see has foundation issues before we buy it, there's, at least in my mind, and I've been in this situation, there's this question of, is this issue repairable? How much is it going to cost? And how can I find someone who is going to give me the straight answers, not going to oversell me, not going to undersell me, is going to really actually help me solve this issue or determine if I should acquire this property in the first place. So how can we get started with that in finding the right people, diagnosing the issue, and really understanding the foundation repair problems that we might be facing?
First of all, the seller should be filling out a SPUDS form. And in that form, they are obligated to disclose any foundation issues, cracking, soil problems. It's very specific and they should be disclosing it. Now, once you understand it, then you can go from there. And you can look at a property and see, okay, there's cracks in the walls, there's doors and windows out of square, the floor slopes, those kinds of things. If you can see those kinds of things, then that's a pretty good clue that if you can find a grouping of them, that's a problem, right? And so what people typically do, which is a mistake, is they'll Google foundation problems or foundation repairs, and up will come foundation repair contractors. Why? Because they're very motivated and they spend a lot of money on marketing. I was one of those guys. And so they make themselves be found and available. Now, the problem is, those guys might be okay at fixing the problem. They're not very good at diagnosing the problem. And they're not good for a number of reasons. The first reason is they're not really engineers. And you really should be a civil engineer if you're going to diagnose foundation issues, which require soil mechanics and structural load paths, and specify repairs. That's what engineering does. That's what engineers are paid to do. So in essence, if you're doing those things and you're not an engineer, you're practicing engineering without a license. Second of all, the people that foundation repair companies send out are sales guys, okay? Sales guys, they don't have 5 years of education and 2 years of apprenticeship and 2 very difficult exams like engineers do. What do they have? They have maybe 2 days in a seminar put on by their supplier. And how are they motivated? They're motivated by 100% commission for everything they sell. So it's like the fox guarding the hen house, right? It's a conflict of interest. And you really don't want these guys diagnosing the problems. they can get it completely backwards. They could miss things. They could include extra things. No one holds them accountable for what they do because there's no jurisdiction that does it. The only people that get held accountable are engineers, which is the guys that need to be doing it. And by the way, engineers can never be paid a commission. It's against the law for engineers to receive income by way of a commission. They either have to be paid by the hour or by the job.
Wow. Okay. So first off, understanding who we're going to meet, if you will, when we go onto Google and search for foundation repair contractors, get them to send somebody out. Probably a salesperson who is not necessarily an expert or an engineer who is technically qualified to diagnose the issues and come up with a potential repair path. Okay, that's the problem if we resort to good old Google to help us find a solution. So that would imply to me that we should go then seek the advice and guidance of an engineer, but then we still need to go find someone who's qualified to help us with this issue. And since they can't be paid on a commission, for example, we're putting ourselves in the situation where we're going to be paying an engineer potentially before we acquire a property to diagnose the foundation issue. Is that kind of the path that you suggest that folks take, is go find an engineer and hire them to look at the property before you buy it?
Yeah. It's as a buyer, you're kind of in a tough spot because the foundation repair companies are going to do it for free because why? Because they want a big job, right? The engineers, they're not motivated that way. So they're going to charge money, a fair amount of money, somewhere between $500 and $900. And you may not even buy the property. So why spend $500 or $900 on something you may not buy, especially if the engineer says, hey, this is a big, huge problem. Now what? You just sunk $900 into something you're not going to buy. So I get that. As a seller, what I'm encouraging everybody to do as a seller is to try to get this done before you put it up for sale. And then if you have a problem, you get it fixed. If you don't have a problem, you have an engineer saying it's good, right? That's the ethical and the best way to do it. As a buyer, it's more difficult. It really is, but that's your best path. Now, you can't just go and get any old engineer, right? That doesn't work. Most engineers don't work in forensics. Most don't work in the residential industry. Most of them work designing infrastructure, freeways, flood control, sewer and water plants and distribution, freeways. That's where most engineers, and maybe building, maybe commercial buildings, but most engineers don't work in residential. Most don't work in forensics. So it needs to be independent. And some engineers work for the home builder. That's one of the problems. If you have a new house and you call the contractor who built it, he'll call an engineer, the guy that designed it, again, conflict of interest, and he'll come out and say, oh, there's nothing wrong. I designed this thing. It's working great. Yeah, there's a few cracks, but don't worry about it. That's what happens. So the engineers have to be independent, which means they don't get most of their income from builders, and they don't get most of their income from insurance companies or from foundation repair contractors, right? They really need to be independent, and they need to be forensic, which means they're looking at stuff that's already built and seeing what's wrong with it. And they need to be civil, which it's probably better to get geotechnical. Civil covers both geotechnical and structural. They're both branches of civil. It's probably better to get geotechnical because these are all soil problems, right? Soil caused problems. It's never, hardly ever the case that, oh, the building is ready to fall down. That's hardly ever the case, even though a foundation repairman might intimate that that could be the case. He's BSing you. These are what they call serviceability problems. These are problems that are functional problems. The building's not behaving the way it should, the way it was designed. It's cracking. Windows and doors don't function right. Pests get in. Insulation doesn't work right. Moisture gets in because of cracks. These are functional issues, and they can be solved with a good plan by a good forensic independent engineer who knows what he's doing. And he may give you a plan. And he may say, okay, yeah, you need 20 helical piers or something like that. Here's your plan. Here's where the 20 piers need to go. Now you can go get three bids from three contractors. That's the way it should be. Rather than what happens now is you get three foundation repair contractors, and one guy says you put in 12 piers. Another guy says you put in three. Next guy says you put in 25. And maybe on the opposite side of the house, right? Who's right? The guy that's right is the one that's most convincing. He may not even, he's probably the least likely to be the one that's the best engineer, right? That's the problem with the industry.
Wow. Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. You make a great point about the the one that's the most convincing. So I think probably the biggest concern outside of the building falling down, which per you is not typically the case, outside of that, the biggest concern is really how much is this stuff going to cost, or is my problem solvable at all? Is it just too far gone? And yeah, the building might not be falling down right now, but it's just sunken too much, or it's too busted to really be
right,
feasibly repairable. How many of those situations in your career did you come up against where it just couldn't be fixed? It was too far gone.
I never met a one that couldn't be fixed. The problem is, you know, is it economically feasible to spend the money on it, right? That's the key. And I've seen like houses that were 12 inches out of level. One of them got demolished, and I'm not sure what happened to the other one. And it could have been fixed, but they chose to tear it down from an economic point of view. I repaired a big industrial tilt-up building, 300,000 square foot building that had sunk 15 and a half inches. And when I came upon the property, it was sinking at a half inch a month. And this was a brand new building that had never been occupied. And the owner paid us $6 million to fix it. And we did. We raised it up level. We raised it up so high, you could crawl underneath the footings of this building.
So in that case, since it had never been occupied, and that's a huge bill to have it repaired, was there some form of like liability on the GC who built it, or maybe the engineer who designed it, or somebody that was involved in the process that did a bad job before you got there?
Nobody got sued on this particular project that I'm aware of. The building was built on top of a landfill. So it was kind of like, okay, we got the land cheap, but you know, we might have some problems with it. I think insurance covered some of the bill. You know, the owner was a big financial group with deep pockets. The building was one of 10 buildings. The other nine were fine, by the way. And each building was worth about $12 million. So they just figured, hey, it is what it is.
Wow. So I'm also curious about the solutions and technologies that are used in foundation repair, say when you have a sinking building. When I've dug into this issue in the past, a lot of what I've come across are these companies that will, if you have like a slab foundation, drill holes in the slab and basically pump a foam under the slab to lift it up and level it. But it seems like probably a newer technology. And I'm just curious how the technologies in general have evolved over the years, and your thoughts on which are the most effective in the long term and also like the most cost-effective solutions.
Yeah. So the foam, let's talk about that. That is a newer product. That's great for leveling slabs. I used foam to level slabs for many years. Good stuff. It doesn't fix soil problems. All it does is re-level the slab. Now, some people think that you can put it underneath footings. I'm not a big believer in that. The foam is compressible and it's not super high strength. So as a solution to put underneath the footings, not a great idea in my opinion. For under the footings, you want to use something like either a helical pier or a hydraulically driven push pier or a micropile. Those are products that you would want put under a load. And then there's one more tool out there called compaction grouting. And what you do is you drive a hollow pipe deep in the soil and you inject very stiff grout, and it actually pushes the soil out, you're like depositing a big lump of cement underneath there that compresses the soil all around it. And that's why they call it compaction grouting, because it compacts the soil around where you grout. And those are tools that are commonly used in the business to fix these kinds of problems. Now, let me point out one more thing. When most people think of foundation problems, they think of settlement, right? But there's actually a paradigm opposite of that that most people are not aware of. And that is, if you are in expansive soils, and what are expansive soils? Clays that when they get wet, they expand. And when they dry, they shrink, right? That's why they're called expansive soils. People have probably heard the term, but they don't understand exactly what it means. If you're in a drier climate and you're built on top of expansive soils and moisture gathers underneath those structures and into those soils, guess what? They're going to expand. And when they expand, it causes a problem called heave, expansive soil heave, and it pushes up and it can tear the heck out of buildings. It'll break concrete, bend steel. I've seen clay expand at 48,000 pounds per square inch. Nothing can stop that. And I've seen buildings 9, 10, 12 inches out of level on one side being pushed up because of these expansive soils. Now, why do not people are aware of it? For one thing, the foundation repair companies have nothing to offer. And they all come from wetter areas. And so they understand how to fix settlement. But heave, that's a foreign beast to them, and they don't want to admit it. Maybe their really experienced guys know about it, but their average salesman may not. And if they have these problems, they go ignored, undiagnosed, or misdiagnosed. It doesn't do any good to put a peer on a foundation that's suffering from heave. Matter of fact, it's counterproductive. So that's another reason why you want an engineer diagnosing these things, because you don't want to get it mixed up, right? You don't want to get it backwards. So heave is a big problem, especially in drier areas. One of the things I developed and patented was a kind of a vacuum system that dries the soils underneath the house and shrinks them back up. And that solves the problem. Maybe long term, it doesn't fix it right away. But it solves it. It keeps it from getting worse, and it's a good solution. But not many people know about it, and certainly the big companies that do these foundation repairs don't know about it. So they typically ignore it. They typically ignore a heave.
Wow. So in the short term, though, so you mentioned that's a longer term type of solution. In the short term, when you have a building like that that has been heaved, what are your options for getting it fixed and solving the problem, like digging up the soil under it and replacing it with something else that's not clay? It sounds like a tough problem to solve.
It's a tough problem for sure. And for many years, it was just undiagnosed or misdiagnosed. And when I ran across it, I would just tell people, sorry, we don't have anything to offer. And that's why I got tired of doing that. So I developed the moisture control system that I developed. It's called Moisture Level. But there are in some extreme instances, like with a post tension foundation that's very stiff, we would dig underneath it and lower the high side. And I did that on a number of occasions. Very expensive, very difficult to do. Certainly can be done to re-level it. If you're raised up on 3/4 of it and you have a 1/4 left, maybe you just raise that 1/4 up to match the 3/4, right? I use some helical piers and some foam or something. So there's a number of options that you can do. But again, you want to get good advice before you jump into something crazy. You don't want to do it based on some wild harebrained idea from a foundation repair sales guy.
Makes sense. And in the topic of heave, I've also dug into, no pun intended, the topic of frost heave, which happens in much larger refrigerated properties where you have to actually keep the slab warm, even though you have a refrigerated section, you have to keep the slab warm to prevent the soil from freezing. Freezes, it expands and shoves up your slab and can break everything similar to the topic of heave that you were talking about.
Well, and it can happen in colder climates too. So, if your footings are not dug deep enough for the frost heave, and I've run across that many times, the footings are not, they're just too shallow. They're not deep enough and the soil underneath them freezes and expands and heaves it right up.
So in the topic of these different solutions that we have, and particularly the compaction grouting and the foams, I would imagine, I don't know this for sure, but I would imagine in certain areas when you're looking at a solution that is essentially based around injecting quote unquote chemicals into the soil, certain areas, environmental regulating bodies might have a problem with that because your water table might be too high, or they might just say, we don't want you shoving concrete however many feet down, or just all kinds of regulatory issues about that. Is that true? Are you going to have a harder time doing things like compaction grouting or maybe the foam in, for example, like California, which tends to have more stringent environmental regulations than other states?
I know a lot of contractors in California, and generally, I would say they get their permits for this kind of work without too much trouble. When you're going to inject a grout, a cement grout in the soil, it's pretty environmentally inert. I mean, the cement comes from dead lobsters that get baked at a high temperature and turned into cement, and then you're just adding sand and rocks and water. So it's basically limestone. So you're putting stuff back that you just got it from there in the first place. Now, polyurethane foam is not that easy to understand, but it's a two-part process. So you mix the two together before you inject it in the ground. So unless your ratios are off, which, even if they're off, it'll still eventually be a catalyst and react with each other. Might be a little slower. Theoretically, you could get some of A or some of B that doesn't have anything attached to it. Probably not in large quantities. I just don't see that being an issue with contamination. Theoretically, yes, it could happen, but I don't think it's realistic or large scaled enough to be a big concern.
Great. Okay. So to wrap it up with a bow before we move on to the three questions I ask every guest on the show, sounds like the process is generally seek the advice and guidance of an engineer first before you start reaching out to contractors, get the engineer's solution, and then approach maybe three different contractors for their bid and go with what the engineer says to do.
Right. That's right. It'll cost you a little more up front, but it'll save you a lot of money on the back end. It could be that all you need to do is fix drainage. And that's easy, super cheap. And a foundation repair contractor is not going to tell you that. So you may save a lot on the back end.
Nice. Okay, great. I'm very excited to dug into this topic today. Again, no pun intended. I'm doing the puns here with the digging. But right now, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsor.
Are you looking for a way to easily track your rental property finances? Check out Stessa. Stessa makes managing real estate investments simple. You can easily keep track of the performance, finances, and the paper trail of your rental properties. Our listeners can get started for free and then upgrade at any time to unlock their more advanced tools. And the even better news is that the upgrade is very affordable and will not break your bank. Smart investors know that tracking the numbers, tracking the money, tracking the finances is what really drives your success. Check out Stessa. It'll make your property finances easier. Just go to escapingwallstreet.com, scroll down to the Stessa logo, and get started for free. Now back to the show.
All right, Bob, I've got three questions I ask every guest on the show. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Great. Number one, what's your number one book recommendation?
Foundation Repair Secrets. It's available on Amazon.
Nice. And I take it that's your book that you had mentioned a bit earlier, Foundation Repair Secrets.
It is my book. And boy, I get a lot of people. I've got a lot of followers on Facebook calling me and talking to me about all the issues and telling me, hey, guess what this foundation repair contractor told me? Yeah, a lot of stuff. So yeah, it's a good book. It helps a lot of people.
Nice. I can see you're very proud of it. Question number two, who or what inspires you?
Oh, I have to say that one of my favorite inspirees is Carl Sagan. Early in my life, I wanted to understand the world a little more. And when I read his first book, Cosmos, it opened my eyes to the world. I started to understand science. I started to understand the scientific methodology and how the world works, what evidence is, how to be a critical thinker. And it started my journey after graduating from college, believe it or not, in learning how to be a critical thinker and really understand how the real world really works.
I love that. That's a great one. Nobody's brought up Carl Sagan on the show before, but his series Cosmos was really incredible and very inspiring to me as well. I haven't read his book, but the series was amazing. Number three, think about Bob at 80 years old. If you could sit down, have a conversation with 80-year-old Bob, what advice, feedback, or guidance do you think 80-year-old Bob would give Bob of today?
Exercise, get the right amount of sleep, and eat right. Because that's going to make 80-year-old Bob a lot happier, and a lot healthier. Those are the three basic things. If you do them right, they're going to give you results. You don't do them, and everybody knows you should do them, right? But do you really do them? Yeah, really do them. 80-year-old Bob is going to be very grateful, which is, by the way, only about 15 years away from me.
Nice. Bob, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing all of this knowledge. If folks want to reach out and get in touch with you, whether Facebook or elsewhere, where can they track you down?
Foundation Repair Secrets is my website, and you can get to my book from there, or if you Google that, Amazon link will come right up right away. Those are the best ways to get a hold of me. You can find me on Facebook. I'm known as the Dirt Whisperer, and you can find me that way. And the thing is, make sure you look for RK Bob Brown. If you Google that, you'll find me.
Great. Okay. Thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. I see your ratings and reviews, all those 5 stars in the comments, and I really appreciate that so much. Gives me a nice, warm and fuzzy feeling every single time. Really appreciate that. And if you are enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one. Great. Well, thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one.